Welcome to the Heritage Wealth Advisors third quarter 2019 Market Outlook Conference Call. All participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a Q&A session at the end of the prepared remarks. At that time, instructions will be given to ask a question. I will now turn the call over to your host, Jay Jordan, Heritage Wealth Advisors Chief Investment Officer. Sir, you may begin.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Jay Jordan. I want to add my welcome to our third quarter 2019 market outlook call. For those of you that would like to follow along, there is a slide deck available on our website in support of today's call that we will be referring to. If you go to www.heritagewealth.net, you can click on resources in the top right corner and then the news and updates tab and then investment management to see the call slides. A replay of the call will also be available on the website. I'm joined on the call today by two members of our investment team, Carrie Baroni and our manager of research, and Dennis Song. Our agenda today is to review recent market performance, discuss our current views with respect to the economy and capital markets, and provide some insights into our current portfolio positioning. So with that, I'm going to turn over the call to Dennis Song.
Great. Thanks, Jay. As Jay mentioned, we will be referring to the deck. If you don't mind turning to page two, we want to give you a quick overview of what's happened in the second quarter with respect to asset class returns. The second quarter was more or less a continuation of strong asset class performance despite the cross currents of trade tensions and other global economic slowdown concerns. If you look across the asset class returns, it was actually pretty positive across both equities and fixed income. Looking at the chart from the left-hand side to the right-hand side, the U.S. equities continue to lead global markets. U.S. large cap were up 4.3% as represented by the S&P 500, and the small cap index was up 2.3%. For the year, the S&P 500 was up 18.5% and the Russell was up 17%. Shifting to international developed markets, in the second quarter, European markets were particularly strong as the ECB signaled even further accommodation on the monetary front. It's interesting to note that the lagger in emerging markets. Emerging markets are up 0.6% as the re-escalation of trade tensions surfaced, in particular with China. Turning to the right-hand side of the chart, that you can see fixed income, the Barclays aggregate index is up 3.1%. And that really has to do with the decrease in rates since the start of the second quarter to the end of the second quarter. During that time frame, the 10-year Treasury yield went from 2.4% down to 1.98%. Just turning the page. The chart on this page depicts the Goldman Sachs Financial Conditions Index. The Goldman Sachs Financial Conditions Index is a measure of interest rates, credit spreads, equity prices, and the U.S. dollar. It's really just a barometer of risk appetite. For those of you following along, you can see that there was a large spike or a large tightening of financial conditions at the start of the fourth quarter of 2018. This coincided with the early October statements that the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell made that we are still a long way from neutral from a rates perspective. That led the markets to price higher rates and slower economic growth combined with lower equity prices, which significantly tightened financial conditions. On January 4th, after a significant sell-off in the equity markets, the Federal Reserve made an about-face talking about exercising patience when it comes to monetary policy. This led to a strong rally in equity prices and lowering of interest rates, and financial conditions eased considerably. In early June, the Federal Reserve went even further by signaling that they're prepared to cut rates if the economic activity continues to slow. Interest rates have since then gone down to around 2% to levels not seen since 2016. I think it's interesting to note that there's a lot of discussion about the length of the current economic expansion and whether it could continue to last. But within this expansion, there's actually been three easing cycles. One, when 2011, during the U.S. government debt downgrade and the Eurozone recession. The second one being 2013, during the U.S. government sequestration. And the third, it was 2015 and 2016, during the industrial recession and the China slowdown. With the Fed embarking on its fourth easing cycle, we believe that the economy is well positioned for a potential reacceleration in the second half of 2019 and into 2020. I'll turn the call over to Kerry for more detailed discussions around the current U.S. and global economic conditions.
Thanks, Dennis. U.S. economic growth has slowed but remains positive. Currently, the Federal Reserve is projecting U.S. real GDP growth of 1.5% in the second quarter. That's below the 3.1% reported in the first quarter and the 2% average rate during this economic expansion, but still positive. While U.S. economic growth has slowed, underlying economic data suggests that the economy should continue to expand. Starting with the consumer, which represents two-thirds of the U.S. economy, the consumer continues to exhibit strong fundamentals. While consumer sentiment has declined, it remains at a level that's consistent with an acceleration of household spending. Average hourly wages continue to increase, and the savings rate remains elevated, which should be supportive of a pickup in spending. Job openings and quits continue to increase, as businesses are in need of more workers and people are leaving their jobs because they believe that they can find better ones. If you're following along with the slides, you can see on page 4 that the unemployment rate has fallen to its lowest level since 1969. Typically, at this very low level of unemployment, we would expect inflationary pressures to be building in the economy. However, this really hasn't been the case yet, as productivity growth has outpaced the increase in unit labor costs. Additionally, people have been returning to the workforce given a favorable labor environment, which should be supportive of growth. Furthermore, the housing industry appears to be setting up for a recovery. Mortgage rates have declined by approximately 100 basis points since November. And history suggests that the recent decline should spur a rebound in home sales and home construction. Purchase mortgage applications have been increasing, which is encouraging. Additionally, vacancy rates are near an all-time low, while housing starts have been running well below the rate of household formation, and the quality of mortgage lending has been strong. As we discussed in previous communications, we initiated a tactical position in U.S. home construction stocks in early February based on a favorable outlook for the industry. With respect to manufacturing and services, purchasing manager indices have fallen but remain at levels that are consistent with expanding activity. Additionally, capital spending intentions remain resilient, as evidenced by an increasing share of small businesses citing that now is a good time to expand. Turning to corporate debt, elevated corporate debt levels appear to be the weakest link in the financial system. If you're following along with the slides, you can see on page 7 that elevated corporate debt levels have preceded each of the last three recessions. However, there appear to be several mitigating factors. For one, the economy-wide interest coverage ratio is hovering above its long-term average. For another, the debt-to-assets ratio is modestly below its long-term average. While high debt levels historically have not been a catalyst for a recession, they can add instability to the financial system and accelerate a downturn. Historically, recessions have occurred due to some significant imbalance in the system. Given the data we've discussed, given this backdrop, we find it difficult to identify any meaningful pockets of excess. With respect to monetary and fiscal policy, accommodative policy should provide a tailwind to growth. In his testimony yesterday, Jerome Powell signaled that the Fed remains biased toward a rate cut in the short term, barring a meaningful improvement in economic data. This stance suggests easing financial conditions, which should be supportive of growth. Fixed income markets are currently pricing in a 25 basis point rate cut at the end of July. If the Fed elects to hold rates steady for longer, a reset of expectations could negatively impact investment returns. As it relates to fiscal policy, while a lower corporate tax rate, looser regulatory environment, and increased federal spending should support growth over the short term, rising deficits and national debt create potential challenges over the long term. Turning to international markets, monetary and fiscal policy have become increasingly accommodative to address slowing global growth. In Europe, financial conditions have been easing, which should spur a reacceleration of credit origination and business activity. Turning to Asia, the health of the Chinese economy should have important implications for global growth. While China and the U.S. have reached a trade truce, the terms of a trade deal have yet to be determined and finalized. However, as we've discussed in previous communications, the Chinese economy is much more dependent on capital spending, household spending, and exports to the rest of the world than exports to the United States. The Chinese economy actually began to slow in 2017. That's before trade tensions escalated due to Chinese authorities implementing stricter or tighter monetary policy and regulation. As the economy continued to slow last year, Chinese authorities reversed course and have now enacted more than 80 measures of stimulus to try to stabilize the economy. If you're following along with the slides, you can see on page 8, as a result, China's credit and fiscal impulse has reached an inflection point, which should provide a tailwind to Chinese imports and consequently global growth. The Chinese economy has started to respond to these stimulus measures, as evidenced by improving rail freight and housing data. With that, I'll turn the call back over to Dennis to discuss valuations, corporate fundamentals, and portfolio positioning.
Great. Thanks, Carrie. Just turning to page 9, as Carrie just discussed, the U.S. economy, and the global economy for that matter, is slowing, but still expanding, with the Fed signaling its support to continue to lengthen this business cycle. I just want to take a quick look at what's happening with earnings and valuation. On page 9, if you look on the right-hand side, you know, the slowing economic growth combined with cost pressures and the trade tensions has driven down earnings expectations. We started the year with S&P 500 earnings expected to grow in about 11%. Now they're down to closer to 1-2%. This reflects the slow expectation for the second half, but also reflects the lower expectations of the investment public. When combined with the equity market performance in the first half of the S&P up 18.5%, the forward PE ratios have expanded meaningfully since the beginning of the year. On the left-hand side of the page, you can see that the current U.S. market forward PE ratios are closer to 17%. And for the MSCI All Country World Index, it's close to 15%, which both are in line with historical averages and the levels that we saw in mid-2018 when interest rates were substantially higher. A question that we are often asked with the markets at all-time highs is that are investors overly exuberant? We believe the answer is generally no, but there are pockets of excess. One, 80% of the IPOs coming to market today are from companies that are not profitable. That is the most since the year 2000. And we're also seeing select pockets of extreme valuation in certain cloud stocks and biotechnology stocks. However, there are still plenty of high-quality franchises that are reasonably priced. And as I mentioned earlier, earnings expectations are low for the rest of 2019. Sentiment surveys remain negative, and funds flows out of equities into bonds have reached extreme levels. What does all this mean for our portfolio positioning? At year end, when we felt that the equity markets had incorrectly discounted a recession, we increased our equity allocations above long-term targets. In the early second quarter, with the multiples having expanded closer to fair value, we reduced our equity exposure back to our long-term targets, but we'll continue to monitor the economic and market developments and make adjustments as warranted. In the different asset classes in equities, we continue to favor U.S. over international companies as we continue to believe the U.S. has the strongest economic outlook. And we're also obviously looking for high-quality companies with reasonable valuations. On the fixed income side, we continue to stay in the shorter duration securities and supplementing that with preferred securities to enhance the yield. With that, I'll turn it back to Jay.
Great. Thanks, Dennis. And so that concludes our prepared remarks. We're now going to turn it back over to the operator for question and answer.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. And we'll take our first question today from James. Your line is open.
Yes, this is Jim Barr, and this question is for Jay. Jay, given what appears to be a slowing economy, are you guys considering any overall portfolio changes?
So, Jim, we made some changes back as we believed that markets were moving higher and the economy was slowing. I think our position today is that, you know, and I think I've said this before, you know, we really view, when you think about the economy and you think about markets, the markets give you opportunities to either add risk to the portfolio or pull risk back from the portfolio based on movements within the economy and movements within valuations. Where we're sitting today is really in a position where we want our clients to be positioned in line with their long-term targets, because while we see the economy slowing, financial conditions, that's reflective of the tightening in financial conditions that occurred back in the second half of 2018. We're in a different environment today where financial conditions are actually easing and we're seeing meaningful stimulus overseas. And so our expectation is that we should begin to see an acceleration of global growth as we get into the second half of 2019. And we want to be positioned to benefit from that growth. But at the same time, as Dennis mentioned, you know, valuations are back at levels that we believe are fair. And that suggests to us that, you know, this is not a time to be taking excess risk. You know, the one thing that I would point to that we have, you know, the other piece is relative to Carrie's point around leverage within the system. It's really bifurcated when you look at where the debt lies. And so to Dennis's point around wanting to, maintain an emphasis on, you know, larger capitalization, higher quality businesses, where balance sheets are actually very healthy, that's how we would like to be positioned. And at the same time, you know, in the credit markets, we're positioned, you know, in investment grade credits as opposed to looking to pick up incremental yield.
Jay, would you add on to that anything about just the underlying quality moves, and then what we did like at year end versus pulling back to the, you know, changes, just to kind of reiterate what we've done in response to what the market's given us here today?
So what Deanne is asking is to kind of add on to that in terms of when we talk about quality, what do we mean? And, you know, what were the moves that we made back at the beginning of the year? And I think, you know, as we've discussed, you know, at the beginning of the year when the economy was clearly slowing and financial conditions were tightening and the market corrected 20%, valuations became attractive in the U.S. market. Became, you know, we were selling at 12, 13, 14 times earnings in large cap U.S. stocks in an environment where our view was that the economy was not as weak as the market was telling us. That was our determination, was to add to our equity weighting at that point, but we did it through adding to higher quality businesses. And the reason that we did that is because we believed that when you looked in the fourth quarter, when the market corrected, correlations really went to one, and high quality businesses and low quality businesses all came down together. And our view is that anytime you have that dynamic in the market and you get an opportunity to upgrade quality of a portfolio at comparable valuations, then you always want to take advantage of that opportunity. And what do we mean when we say quality? What we're really talking about when we say quality are businesses with strong, stable, and growing cash flows that participate in the end markets that are growing with a strong competitive position and, you know, meaningful barriers to entry within that business, companies that have high returns on capital, and every bit as importantly, companies that have management teams that have proven over a long period of time an ability to allocate capital effectively to the long term, not the short term, but the long term benefit of shareholders, and of course balance sheets that are very strong and supportive of a business through weaker economic periods. Again, back in the second quarter, as Dennis mentioned, we did pull back some of that equity exposure, or that overweighting to equities, as valuations normalized. And that was simply reflective of a belief that, based on an expectation of continued earnings growth, but normalized valuations, that it no longer was appropriate, that we were no longer being paid to continue to be overweight equities in an environment where we believe we should expect normal returns from equities.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question today, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause for a moment to allow any further questions to queue. And once again, that is star and one if you would like to ask a question today. And I am showing that we have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back for any further remarks.
Okay. Well, we want to thank everyone for joining the call. A copy of the call will be available on the website along with the slides. Please don't hesitate to reach out with any additional questions to Carrie, Dennis, me, or any other member of the team at Heritage. So I hope everybody has a great day, and this will conclude our remarks.